We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, Bankstown? Hey, how we doing?
He's Joel, I'm Jeremy. Mark. It's an abbreviated version of The Killer Bees on this Tuesday afternoon on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. We take you the first 30 minutes leading into pregame coverage of Game 4 of the American League Division Series between the Astros and the White Sox. Astros lead the series 2-1. They're trying to close it out in Chicago today. Right after we went off the air yesterday, the Astros making it known that Lance McCullers on full rest will get the start. We were pondering the decision. We were wondering what Dusty Baker would do. I was firmly on the fence about it. I'm not going to lie. I hate doing that. I like taking a stance and being strong about it. I started off with the idea that I wanted Lance McCullers. Look, he is your ace. Give him the ball if he's ready to go. Urquidy in Game 4, Lance McCullers in Game 5 sounded pretty good to me. I don't think that there was a wrong answer here. I think they went to Lance McCullers in the situation, Joel, and that's why Dusty didn't announce it during his press conference. Waited to go to the hotel, I guess, and talk to Lance McCullers. I think McCullers said, give me the ball. I think Lance McCullers wants the ball in Chicago and get this series done with.
Let's be honest, Jeremy. This is a franchise that really bases a lot of their decisions off of analytics. And the analytics says no matter what Lance McCullers Jr. has done in the past, Lance McCullers Jr. this year got a majority of his wins on the road. And so if he was comfortable with the decision, then the Astros were going to go and lean towards the numbers that said, this is the kind of guy of all of our starting pitchers, because Zach Greinke isn't one of them, this is the kind of guy that we can put him out there and feel confident on the road. It's not going to be intimidating to him. No matter what people say, no matter what the reactions are, he thrives off that extra energy, and he's going to be fine. Some of the younger guys, you might have to second-guess the decision because it's a different environment. It's a different feeling. It's a different reaction. And some guys aren't ready for that kind of primetime moment. He's the kind of guy, he likes the fact that he's now the ace. He's always wanted to be in a position where he was always constantly looking over his shoulder at the big dog, whether it was Greinke for 1 year, but whether Cole or Verlander or someone else, he was always aspiring to be where they were. He loves this opportunity to be where they were. And I think he's going to soak all of it up and he's going to be fine.
He loves the moment. And before this season, you might not do this because before this season, he hasn't been great on the road. This year, he's made the, he's caught up in his road performances as his home starts have really always been good. But he likes the big moment. I mean, you go back to the 2017 season, whenever they won the World Series, he was the guy that you piggybacked with in Game 7 against the Yankees, the 132 straight curveballs. We know the story by now. And then got the start in Game 7 of the World Series. And then if you want to go back to like the biggest regular season game this year for the Astros, was at Dodger Stadium, was at L.A., and he mowed down that dangerous Dodger lineup and said, hey, this is for you, Houston. So I think Lance McCullers wanted the baseball. You have your ace on full rest. You give him the ball. You can never be mad at that. I think the wheelhouse having a little fun with your comments yesterday about how it's a panic move going with Lance McCullers in Game 4. I don't think you meant it that way.
Did I say panic?
Yeah.
I said it, you're acting. To me, it's you're acting as if you're playing from behind, yep, as opposed to being in control of the situation.
And then it comes off as like a panic move, which I don't think you meant it that way. I think I think they're nitpicking the word that you use. And I feel like you're fine with Lance McCullers.
So they're comfortable
going
enough in their own skin and like that we've given them their little benefit of the doubt month that they're going to start doing that? Because if they do that, I mean, there's plenty of ammunition to rip the little kiddie pool apart on the training wheelhouse. So, I mean, whatever you want to do, that's fine.
Jose Urquidy not getting the start today. Justy Baker, that's been announced that Urquidy is going to be available in the bullpen. Urquidy said he might even do some of the stuff that he does in the clubhouse, like he's getting ready for a start, which lets you know that if there's a game five tomorrow, that it will be Framber Valdez on full rest that gets that start. So Framber not in the bullpen today. Jose Urquidy is. Do you see a scenario in which you use Jose Urquidy in this game?
Yeah, I think unfortunately for Astros fans, it would be if Lance gets knocked out early. I don't think that unless he throws, again, we know the one negative tendency on Lance besides walks, and he seemed to overcome that in game one. But the other thing is, as I always mentioned to you, that one big inning of too many pitches. And that's the one thing that you got to be careful about because, yes, he's been your workhorse and he's been able to go longer into games than anybody else. However, the one thing that is a detriment and kind of prevents him from doing that is when he has that 25 to 35 pitch inning that really sets him back. They've happened a lot on the road. And so you've got to be careful of that. That's a scenario where I can see an Urquidy coming in and going, okay, I got to bridge the gap between Lance throwing too many pitches. Plus, he's not done after this series. You're going to need him if you win. Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, I think that obviously with higher aspirations and still in control of the series being up a game, that you want to start thinking about the fact that at some point you're also going to want him ready for the next series. So you don't want him throwing 120 pitches. So I think that's where Urquidy factors in because you did have Javier and Greinke both come up last game, and especially in the case of Javier, once he's used in a game, you normally got a couple of days off before he can use him again.
Yeah, I don't see a scenario where he pitches again in this series, to be honest with you, for Javier. It's revisionist history because you didn't know that you were going to get a rainout in game four, but Jose Urquidy might have been a pretty good option in game three if you knew that there was going to be that rainout in game four and you wouldn't play until today, and then you'd have Lance McCullers starting today's game. I mean, I think Urquidy could potentially be used today. Not, if Lance McCullers pitches well, I think it eliminates the idea of using Jose Urquidy because hopefully Lance goes about six innings deep into this game. Like, does he jump Ryan Stanek for you? Because that's the only way I can see him being used late in the game. He's not going to pitch the ninth because you have Presley. He's not going to pitch the eighth because you're still going to show the benefit of the doubt in Kendall Graveman. The only way I can see him pitching seventh inning or later in this game, barring it doesn't go to extra innings, is if he jumps Ryan Stanek in the pecking order, which I don't think that he does.
I don't think so either. I just don't because of the fact that situationally and the way that Urquidy's been used, again, stretched out as a starter, he is, again, another one of those guys that, look, it's not the ability to get guys out or the quality of the arm in the bullpen. It's the fact that they're not used to being a bullpen arm where you got to get up quickly and get ready to go fast. And that's the detriment that you have with Javier, Greinke, Urquidy now in the pen as well. That it's a setback, right? Because that's why we said yesterday, too, it also, instead of going back to Yimi, it's the reason why you have these guys start an inning, because it feels like a start. Yeah. They can go right to the mound with nobody on base and act like it. They would act if it was first pitch of inning number one. So I think that's where it can be an issue. We don't know how quickly he can get warm. Plus, you're dealing with a guy that's had two shoulder injuries on the same shoulder throughout this season. You don't want him to rush through it. And it causes him to have more problems mechanically.
Yeah, I think the only way you see him today is if it goes extras or if Lance McCullers gets knocked out early. You'd hate to use him behind in a game because you want to see possibly if you're behind in a game and it goes to a game five, you have that option out of the bullpen behind Framber, who didn't last long in game two. 713-780-3776. There is a little bit of football to get to. Monday Night Football, Ravens down 19 yesterday in the second half. Lamar Jackson with his arm leads the comeback. Outstanding game for Lamar Jackson. Ravens get the win over the Colts. Colts blow the big lead. But the headline that happened yesterday during Monday Night Football, John Gruden resigning from his job with the Las Vegas Raiders, racist, anti-gay language, says that he doesn't want to be a distraction for the Las Vegas Raiders. Big news out of the NFL, Gruden is done in Vegas.
Yeah, and the bigger thing is that Mark Davis didn't want to fire him because otherwise, this all came out on Friday. He had no business coaching this last weekend, but Mark Davis wasn't responsive to the league.
I'm not sure he did. Did you see how the Raiders played in that game?
Well, okay, but bottom line was, this is the same way when the Dodgers had said Bauer was going to pitch right after all those things happened, and finally, you know, smarter heads got involved and said, no, he's really not. The league didn't get involved in time or couldn't prevent Mark Davis from letting him coach. But then at a certain point, they put too much pressure on him going, look, this can't continue. And evidently, I'm sure their researchers found out there was more than just one comment about DeMora Smith and the Players Association, and it was going to get uglier, and something had to be done. And so they did. And I think that, look, he didn't resign. He settled for something else because he got more money out of the deal. They owed him roughly $60 million. You don't resign unless you know there's a reason to or they're taking care of you to do so. But this is the end for John Gruden. This is it. You think you know someone. It's funny, like with having a wife on television and with us doing what we do, we develop relationships with our viewers and with our listeners. But then they think they know us. But they don't know how we are when we're off the air. I thought I knew John Gruden. I have a buddy of mine that played with, won a Super Bowl on the team that he coached in Tampa and knew him and never said a bad word about him. But you hear him and see him on TV, you say, I like that guy. I like the way he goes about his business. He's fun. He's funny. But he's also known football. But you don't know him. And then all of a sudden you hear this, and he almost tried to coach you out of your beliefs that he might have said something because he was like, I'm done with this.
Yep.
I can't be responsible for what I said 10 years ago, but you know what? I'm moving forward. So you're moving forward too, and we're just going to talk about football and the Raiders, and that's what I'm going to do. You're full of it, John. You can't do that.
Here was John Gruden after the game on Sunday before he resigned yesterday.
I've learned a lot, and again, I'm not going to rehash the event again. I think I feel very good about the things I have learned. I also feel really good about what I stand for, as I said yesterday, and I'll be happy to talk about football, but I'll just leave it at that.
Nope, you won't be doing that any longer. Now, I'm not going to be naive to the idea that a bunch of football coaches in the world talk like this. Like, John Gruden's not the only one that says racist and anti-gay things. The difference here is you put it on public record. Like, what are you doing typing that stuff in an email and sending that off to a buddy? Like, the fact that you have a paper trail of this now gets you into trouble. And now in 2021, things are a lot different, too. What I kind of find curious about this, and look, I believe that John Gruden should resign. I believe that John Gruden should no longer be the coach of the Raiders. One, because it's stupid that you send it out in an email that you talk like this, and that now you are a distraction to that Raiders football team, and it's better just to wash your hands of it and let him go. What I do find curious about this is you turn it back to, like, the city of Houston. Like, John Gruden, these were terrible remarks that he said, but you have a quarterback down the road that's been alleged by 24 women of sexual assault, and he could play tomorrow in the NFL if he got traded. Like, I find that to be a problem with the National Football League.
Well, there's never been any consistency in most of the big three sports. The closest thing to it is the NBA that actually tries to hold themselves accountable. But when you look at it, and we know all the things with Rob Manfred and the Astros and how it's, you know, a poster child team as opposed to, you know, a widespread issue that had to be addressed in baseball. And then from a football perspective, they don't look at past precedents. And it's funny because you've got Goodell, who's got a background in you know, all kinds of legal as well as, you know, different ways to do management, but yet he doesn't use examples of the past to be the reasons, some of the reasons why you make the decisions of the future. To me, the biggest thing is you got two grown men in some of the most high profile positions in business and in broadcasting. You got Gruden on Monday Night Football at the time that the email started going around. You've got his former general manager in the vice president or president's role with the Washington football team. And they decide that it's one thing that if you guys are, because there's several people that have come up and said, you know, John likes to pick on everybody for their shortcomings and have fun with them and do those kind of things. That's one thing to say, you know what, amongst the guys in the locker, it's locker room talk, right? But it's not locker room talk. You took it to another level, and then you put your fingers on the keyboard and decided to do it in a format in which, naive to you, and evidently the person you were sending them to, who should have also been smart enough to figure this out, just because you hit delete on an email, and maybe you didn't even do that, you are creating a permanent record of your shortcomings that is going to be something that's going to be legal record if needed. And the fact that there were thousands of them, I guess, and there was multiple instances, and all, like you said, all these different people that, and different areas were offended. How smart or lack of smarts do you have to be to sit there and go, here's a good idea. Me and my buddy, we're just going to cut it up and just start ripping people for the color of their skin or the sex that of a referee or the sexual preferences of a potential draft pick or all these other things. It's like, God, John, I mean, you're smarter than that. You should be smarter than that. And you aren't. You weren't. And so you pay the price. He's done. Like, I was thinking about this today. What could he possibly do going forward? He can't do broadcasting anymore. There's no way anybody can hire him.
He's done. I mean, he's going to go live on an island somewhere, go live in Florida and go.
He can't do coaching on the pro level.
I think he's going to go away.
My buddy said, well, he should go back to college. On the educational side of thing, from the chancellor's standpoint, do you think that a chancellor of a university is going to go, I completely support the decision to hire a guy whose past says he's a racist and more.
There's been some pretty bad things that coaches that are employed right now in college football have said and have jobs and really good offense and defensive minds. I just don't think Gruden's going to want to do that. I think Gruden's going to say, you know what? I have plenty of money. I've made more money than I'll ever need. I'm going to go vacation somewhere and just live my life like that. For the rest of the way. We will have one of the authors who broke this story on the New York Times on our show tomorrow. Astros White Sox ALDS Game 4 pregame coverage begins in 15 minutes right here on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. When we return, let's take a look at this Dusty Baker starting lineup. Did Dusty already make a costly mistake ahead of Game 4? That's next. That. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, you want to bet on the Astros today because you feel good, you feel lucky, and you want them to win, or you've got some other bets in your back pocket that you'd like to place down? Only one place to do that. It's MyBookie.ag. MyBookie.ag makes sure your money is secure. When you put it in, it stays there until you want to take it out. When you want to take it out, they pay you. They don't hem and haw and try to keep it from you. And right now, for ESPN listeners, they got a special deal. Whether you're an existing customer of MyBookie, you used to be a customer of MyBookie, or you're a new customer of MyBookie, your next deposit is going to be doubled up to $1,000. Put $100 in, they put $200 in your account. More money means more games you can bet on and more chances to win and more opportunities for you to cash in. That's the way they do it at MyBookie.ag. They also do lots of fun contests and promotional bets. You don't have to put anything in, but if you win, you get the money out. They take care of you every step of the way. MyBookie.ag, put in the promo code BET975, double that next deposit, and then get ready to be a part of all the action. From all the different prop bets and things that they've got going on and the promotions to the hunches that you play, college football, pro football, Major League Baseball playoffs, NBA around the corner, soccer if you wish. It's all there for you, including live in-game betting. And you can do it anywhere from the tablet that you have to your iPhone to your computer. Anytime, anywhere, any place. There's only one place to bet. It's MyBookie.
This is ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
All right, the other ALDS already over. Red Sox beating the Rays yesterday. They're advanced. They're waiting the winner of the Astros and the White Sox. The other series, Giants took a 2-1 lead on the Dodgers yesterday. They beat Max Scherzer. Evan Longoria with the solo home run. That was enough as the Giants shut out the Dodgers 1-0. Braves up 2-1 on the Brewers. Both of those series will be in action today as well. Let's get to the Astros lineup ahead of Game 4 of the ALDS. Tony La Russa fills out his lineup card like this. Tim Anderson leads it off at short. Yan Moncada is the third baseman batting second. Luis Robert in the three-hole in center field. Jose Abreu, the cleanup man at first. Jasmani Grandal catches, bats fifth. Aloy Jimenez is the left fielder batting sixth. Gavin Sheets against the righty. DH's bats seventh. Leroy Garcia, the hero in Game 3, is in right field batting eighth. Cesar Hernandez is the second baseman batting ninth. And, of course, Carlos Rodon is on the mound for the Chicago White Sox, dealing with that arm trouble. We'll see what he brings to the table. He faces the Astros lineup that leads it off with second baseman Jose Altuve. Michael Brantley bats second, plays left field. Alex Bregman in the three-hole at third. Yordan Alvarez, the DH, bats fourth. Carlos Correa, the shortstop, in the fifth spot. Yuli Gurriel follows in the sixth hole at first base. Kyle Tucker down a spot against the lefty Rodon in right field, bats seventh. Jake Myers gets the start against the lefty in center field, batting eighth. And Martin Maldonado catches and bats ninth. Joel, your thoughts on the Astros lineup filled out by Dusty Baker?
As long as my guy's in center field, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, look, to me, it's the most potent offensive lineup with consistency in baseball. So I don't care where these guys are hitting. I understand sliding Yuli down to the seventh spot last game because of the fact that he was 1-for-8 going into the game, and he still hasn't really figured it out like he had in the regular season, and you got to play with the hot bats. That's why I'm surprised it took this long for La Russa to put Robert in the three-hole, because he has been just on fire for them, and you already know who your leadoff hitter is and how much I've said that he scares me offensively. But I think for the most part, if you have issues, tell me. I'm not really concerned about where they hit in the lineup per se. Obviously, against lefties, Tucker and or Brantley would be guys that would struggle against a lefty. But I'm not worried about where they're hitting.
I'm not a fan of Brantley batting in the two-hole against the lefty. I thought Charlie hammered this point home pretty well. Brantley against lefties is like Martin Maldonado, maybe worse than Martin Maldonado. I've even heard him compared to a National League pitcher against lefties. Brantley against lefties this season, 219 average, 261 on base, 314 slugging. Terrible slash numbers against left-handed pitching, and there he is in the second spot. Like, if you need Brantley in the lineup because he's the veteran, he's the guy that you trust, I don't understand why he's batting second, and Kyle Tucker, who hits lefties well, is batting seventh. So I feel like that's a bad move by Dusty Baker, ignoring the numbers. And, you know, we've talked about it all year. It doesn't surprise me. Dusty plays favorites. Dusty believes in veterans. He believes in guys like Michael Brantley. We'll see how it all plays out today in game four.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that, you know what, no one knows. I Dusty, of course, could rebuttal and say, well, we don't know how long Rodon's going to be on the mound. And you know what? And if they change and they go to a righty, then the lineup works out perfect for me. And they like to use a lot of relief pitchers anyway. And Michael Brantley's a professional hitter. Look, I understand because you've had concerns about him hit against lefties. And we've had the debate, you know, for the last month of the regular season. But I think that when push comes to shove, the way this entire locker room and clubhouse looks at Michael Brantley, and the way that they think about him as being a guy that's been clutch, but that is a leader on this team as a professional hitter that can at least put the bat on the ball, that's why he's in the two hole. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it goes with basketball. I mean, baseball logic and analytics. But I think that's why I'm okay with it. He's protected by so many good bats. The lineup is just so thorough that I'm not just going to harp on the two hole and say, regardless of where Michael Brantley hits or who he's hitting against. Look, the bottom line is, too, they're facing a pitcher that shut them down in Chicago the last time they faced him. Now, he's different. They're different. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. But I don't think he's going to give you more than five innings today.
Five innings might be high. I need to look at the player props to see his over-under an innings pitch. Rodon, though, 13-5 on the year, 237 ERA before his arm was giving him trouble, was a contender there for the AL Cy Young. I think a couple of things you look for early in this game. One, the velo for Rodon. Like, he's a guy that really sits mid-90s. He can touch 96, 97, sometimes even up to 98. If he's sitting low 90s early, I think the White Sox might have a quick hook, knowing this is a do-or-die game. And if he is sitting low 90s, you have to feast on Carlos Rodon early. You have to take advantage of the fact that he doesn't have his best stuff and his best velo.
But Jeremy, let's also be honest that even if he had 95+, this is what the Astros lineup feeds off too. If he wants to be Lance Lynn and he wants to rely on his fastball, regardless of, you know, how many where he throws it or how fast he's throwing it, this is the lineup to not do that against, because they struggle more with breaking pitches and off-speed pitches than they and guys that change speeds really well. Lance Lynn threw something like 90-some percent of his pitches were fastballs,
yep,
and he got them sent right back at him at faster than what he threw them at them at. So, you know, that's the thing that you got to be aware of, too. I don't care how hard he throws. I'm more concerned about where he throws. If he has command of the lower part of the zone and he's keeping his breaking pitches down and he's keeping them off balance, now if you're an Astros fan, you got to be worried.
Yeah, I'm not scared about the fastball, and the Astros are a good fastball hitting team. What you can use to your advantage, though, is if Rodon sees that, like he turns around and sees on the radar gun that he's only throwing 90, I think that's going to mess with him. I think it's going to affect him. Lance McCullers on the other end, very good in game one. What are a couple things you're watching early in Lance McCullers' second start in this series?
Well, like any other time I watch Lance McCullers, is because of the walks, I'm looking at control. If he, you know, he's got two devastating strikeout pitches, the curve and then the development of the slider. But they have to stay low in the zone, because one thing we know about this White Sox team is, one, they also feast on fastballs, just ask Tim Anderson. But the other thing is they feast on mistakes, and they'll make you pay if you leave breaking pitches up in the zone. So if he's spotting on the black and on the corners, his slider and his curveball, look for another outstanding outing from Lance McCullers. Because if he has command of his stuff, he has some of the best stuff in baseball. Whether you want to call him an ace yet or not, I'm here to have that debate with you later. But as an Astros fan, if he's commanding his secondary pitches, the Astros are in good shape.
I think to add to that, too, just how comfortable he looks. Like, Lance sometimes can be a little bothered. He lets things get to him a little bit. But if he has that comfort in the game and you can see that on the mound, I think that's something that will go a long way for Lance McCullers today. I think it will be something that leads to good control today as well. All right, that's it for us. Good half hour. We enjoyed it. We'll be back here tomorrow, hopefully talking about an Astros victory. Thanks to Dell for doing all the hard work. He's Joel. I'm Jeremy. Pre-game coverage, game four is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Go Stroh!
You going to answer that?
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.